From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, a Hudson Valley assemblyman introduces legislation to ban guns for people who appear on the federal no-fly list. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the upcoming special elections for the former Senate and Assembly leaders' seats, and a new poll finds that voters overwhelmingly support a number of Governor Cuomo's priorities for 2016. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A New York State Assemblyman from the Hudson Valley recently introduced legislation to ban guns for people who appear on a federal no-fly list. The bill, which echoes calls on the national level, is drawing both support and opposition. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Westchester County Assemblyman Tom Abinanti has introduced legislation to prohibit people named on the FBI's no-fly list from obtaining or renewing a license to carry firearms.
If you're not safe to fly, you're not safe to have a gun. It's just plain, simple common sense.
He says the no-fly list falls under the federal government's terrorism watch list, which is maintained by the Terrorist Screening Center within the FBI. Individuals who are suspected or known terrorists are placed on the list. Abinanti contends the terror watch list is not always up to date and wants a separate FBI list, the no-fly list, made available to New York State to close a gap.
If the federal government thinks they're dangerous, I think they deserve a second look before we give them a gun. Before it's a handgun, before it's a rifle, before it's an assault weapon, we have to give them a second look. We've got to be very, very careful. The situation that occurred in California raises the red flag for us. It highlights how easy it is for bad people to get guns. We need to protect ourselves. We need to target those people who are targeting us for harm.
In California, he refers to the San Bernardino shootings as the latest such attacks in prompting his bill. New Jersey has a law banning anyone on a terrorist watch list from obtaining an ID card permitting the purchase of firearms. And in December, Connecticut Governor Danielle Malloy, citing the San Bernardino shootings and November Paris attacks, announced his intention to sign an executive order banning people on federal terrorism watch lists from purchasing firearms in his state.
This issue about people on the terrorism watch list who can be denied access to an airplane but can buy guns in the United States and did so successfully 2,043 times between 2004 and 2014. That is a gigantic loophole, which I'm prepared upon agreement with the White House and the Justice Department to sign an executive order that would add that as a background check to our system in Connecticut.
Republican Dutchess County Assemblyman Kieran Lawler criticizes Abinanti's bill as politically motivated.
I think this bill is very political and very ideological, and it's not really about providing safety or security for the people of New York State or this country. It's about taking some issues that are in the headlines and trying to spin them favorably toward Democrats or those on the left.
Leah Gunn Barrett is executive director of New Yorkers Against Gun Violence.
And certainly for a state like New York, which is a terrorist target in so many instances, this is something that should be done pronto. And I don't think you would broach any kind of opposition from either party on this because it's a matter of a safety, public safety.
Yet, as already expressed by Lawler, there is opposition. The East Fishkill lawmaker says the bill would erode Second Amendment rights.
Can you think of another right that could be taken away from you, a constitutional right in the Bill of Rights that could be taken away from you because somebody in the government puts you on a secret list and you lose that right? I can't figure that.
In addition, there are questions about just which authorities in New York State would have or be granted access to such classified information as a federal watch list. Lars Dalside is a spokesman for the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legal Action.
You can be on this list because someone that you're friends with lives in a building with someone who knows a terrorist. So there's no real rhyme or reason why this is happening. And to use this list to just broadly paint a brush against those that you want to deny the right to purchase a firearm is not a good idea.
Abinanti's bill has 7 co-sponsors and 3 multi-sponsors, all Democrats. Democratic Senator Brad Hoyleman of Manhattan sponsors the bill in the Senate, where there are 6 co-sponsors, also all Democrats.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week we see a new poll finding that voters overwhelmingly support a number of Governor Cuomo's priorities for 2016, but there's still some mixed reviews on the governor.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting because he made a series of mistakes early in his career. For example, he alienated almost the entire teaching community. Now, when people don't like you, it's like me. I have 1,000 people I don't like over the years. There's some really bad people in this world. And believe me, I know them all. And you know what happens, David, is that 10 years later, you don't remember why you didn't like them. So you got these people on your list. I think what happened is his numbers fell, you know, to sort of 50% or lower, and that's disaster for a governor. So we don't really know how permanent this damage is. He's tried to turn things around. He tacked left, as they say in sailing, and he attempted to bring back many of the liberal constituents that he had in the beginning, talking about a minimum wage, all good, gun control, all good, and did what he had to do in order to bring back a lot of the people that he had alienated or lost. However, you know, there is a question as if once you lose them, can you get them back? And that is, of course, what he must be struggling with right now. After all, he came on as a non-tax conservative, as a guy who put severe constraints on what our schools could raise. And there will be people, you know, who remember that kind of thing. On the other hand, he's done some really good things now. And the only question is it too late?
Well, we were waiting. We said it was going to happen, and it has happened. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has announced the date, April 19th, for the special election for both leaders. That's former New York State Senate leader Dean Skelos and former New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, who were brought down in corruption scandals. These seats are very important, obviously.
Forget the Silver seat. That's a Democratic seat, and it's going to be in the Assembly, and then whoever wins is not going to be the Speaker of the Assembly. But the Skelos seat, that is really, really important. The Republicans are up in the state Senate by one vote right now. And if they can't hold on to that Long Island seat, which has been historically theirs, Dean Skelos, they're going to be in big trouble. So what happens is the Democrats go out and for once they find a really good candidate for that seat, a former prosecutor, a young man, a guy who has real substance to him, and he's very popular in his district. And he is being faced, of course, by somebody else who does not have his credentials. So because Skelos ended up in such disgrace, and because people were holding their noses and ashamed and all the rest, it does look like this other fellow, Todd Kominsky, you know, he's got it. And that, of course, could upset the entire balance. But it doesn't stop there for the Republicans, because there's also another Long Island Republican who is running for Congress and is saying the heck with this. Now, the Republicans have a lot of very old guys in that conference. And once it goes, it goes. And once there's a fair drawing of the district lines, which there is not right now, you know, they have always drawn the lines where they have the best shot, which is a disgrace in a democratic society, then that'll be the end of them. After all, New York is a blue state. Now, there are those who think that the Democrats in the New York State Senate haven't distinguished themselves. A number of them went to jail, a number of them were crooks. And there are those who think, hey, wait a second now, there are too many politicians who think that there is a license to steal. And frankly, that's been on both sides of the aisle. But the Democrats have really had their share. And if they continue to do the kind of stuff they've done in the past, where they nominate people who are unacceptable, look, then they will lose it. So it's up to them, and it's theirs to lose. And I can only say that it does look like the Democrats are going to be back in control of the New York State Senate, except for Jeff Klein and his independent caucus, conference, Democratic caucus, IDC, And he made the best deal possible with the Republicans. And so he's perceived as a traitor by the people in the Democratic Senate ranks, the regular Democrats. He's got four people behind him. If he keeps his five votes with the Republicans, they'll stay in power even though they lost. And that's where Andrew Cuomo comes in, because if Andrew Cuomo now says, you guys get back where you belong, because we've all felt all along that Cuomo wanted a Republican Senate, that he didn't want the Democrats because then they'd spend their way out of, and he'd have all kinds of problems with them. That way he didn't have to be the bad guy. The Republicans would be the bad guys. But if Cuomo tells Klein and the other so-called traitors that they have to go back to the regular Democrats, they'll have to do it, and that'll be the end of that.
I want to remind folks that we mentioned this last week, a coup of sorts, and that is Preet Bharara, the U.S. Attorney of New York, who has brought down many of these same politicians we're talking about, corruption investigations and convictions, is going to be speaking. You'll be talking with him for an hour at WAMC's Linda Norris Auditorium, live on the air. WAMC.org is where you can go Monday at 4 p.m. I'm sure it'll be a very interesting hour.
Well, it's going to be great, and we are honored at WAMC and at public radio in general. The fact that Preet Bharara has called on us to do this, and we're delighted. I mean, he's my great hero. As far as I'm concerned, nobody has done a better job. Look, you know, the Democrats in the Assembly, Silver goes, and the good Democrats. I'm not talking about the crooks. The good Democrats, who do they go in and nominate? These are the people who say, well, we should clean ourselves up. They go and nominate Boss Hastie of the Bronx. What, are they crazy? I mean, you know, this is not turning over a new leaf. This is a guy who is the head of the Bronx political organization and has now brought those various skills, or dubious skills or not, into the Assembly.
Do you think Preet has any higher ambition, Alan?
Could be. I mean, you know, there are many of us who would like to see him run for governor. I'm sure he's never said anything like that and never would say anything like that. And I have my doubts as to whether it really is true. But if the people of New York State get a chance to vote for him for governor, even in a Democratic primary against Andrew Cuomo, that could be very interesting.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Now that medical marijuana is legal in New York, the industry is getting off the ground under strict state regulations and guidelines for dispensing the product. The five companies allowed to grow and distribute it were allowed to open dispensaries beginning this month. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was at Columbia Care's dispensary recently, which opened in Plattsburgh.
The medical marijuana dispensary in Plattsburgh is the only one in New York's North Country. The next closest is in Albany. Columbia Care is the authorized provider and has remodeled a building on Route 3, a main thoroughfare in the community, for its secure clinic. Columbia Care's medical marijuana is grown and manufactured in Rochester at the Eastman Kodak Business Park, which distributes the product to dispensaries in Riverhead, Long Island, Manhattan, Rochester, and Plattsburgh. The company also has licenses or operates medical marijuana dispensaries nationally, including in Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and Arizona. CEO Nicholas Vita expects business to ramp up in Plattsburgh and across the state as patients and physicians understand their options.
There could be as many as 200,000 to 400,000 patients in New York State that could qualify under the existing program. But because this is a medical program and because it's driven by clinicians and medical providers, the doctors effectively, you always see a very slow ramp. This is consistent with what we've seen in every market. Actually, in New York City, where we opened our first facility, we've had quite a bit of interest, both from physicians and from patients, and we would expect that in the North Country, the adoption rate will continue along the same lines. The first thing we need to do is to really develop a dialogue with physicians, with patients, and provide transparency and really information so that everybody understands what it is, what we do, and how we do it.
So what happens when a patient comes to the Plattsburgh dispensary? It's by appointment only, and after a registered patient comes through the secure entry door, the receptionist will buzz you into a spacious waiting area. Vita explains what happens next.
So we're in the waiting room. Over here in this reception area is where we would do the final certification of the patient, and we would do that electronically. We can validate that this is a patient that's enrolled with the state and in good standing. Once a patient has been cleared, the
pharmacist tech or the pharmacist would come back into the waiting area and actually bring a patient through this door. And this is the dispensary floor. Back here is the patient education room where a pharmacist and a patient could actually reach out to the attending physician who, and have a collaborative open discussion. And then back here is where we would have the transaction actually take place.
Smokable marijuana is prohibited. Approved forms of medical marijuana include liquid or oil tinctures to be administered orally, under the tongue, or through vaporization and capsules. Columbia Care Executive Chairman Michael Abbott says he liked hearing a description of their dispensary as a combination of an Apple store and a medical facility.
Our mission is medical. It's very simple. And I think that any stereotypes that may exist will be, you know, debunked by data. I think we can also, at a more superficial level, I think we can also create an environment, our dispensaries, that is more approachable, a feeling of greater security, accessibility to people who may have never used this product before, that may have a perception that the place that they walk into is perhaps something that they may have seen on television from another state that may not have the same standards and the same, you know, regulation that somewhere like New York has. And so that's what we try to produce here.
Columbia Care will open two more dispensaries by the end of the week, one in Rochester and another in Riverhead, Long Island.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
An Albany area state assemblyman is unveiling a package of legislation meant to enhance the quality of life for New Yorkers living with autism. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one in 68 children in the U.S. is born with autism. It's recognized as one of the fastest-growing developmental disabilities in the country. Kirk Lewis, executive director of Schenectady ARC, says the more we learn about autism, more services are needed to assist those on the spectrum.
As those children become adults, we need a system of supports and services that can meet those needs. So I think there's a growing awareness that the people with autism spectrum disorders do present some unique needs that haven't been fully addressed by the traditional service system, and that those needs are increasing.
Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara, who represents Montgomery County and portions of Schenectady and Albany counties, is unveiling a package of bills he's calling the Autism Action NY Plan. Santa Barbara, whose 14-year-old son was diagnosed with autism at age 3, says families living with autism face unique challenges.
It was rather difficult, I think, to sort of figure out where to collect information, what to do next. And, you know, we did find out, but it took time to find out what the best path was for my son.
The five-point plan would focus on increasing job opportunities, providing independent housing options, improving access to information, assisting in communication, and creating a centralized location for services in New York. Santa Barbara, a Democrat, says the centralization of services is the most important component and would be overseen by an Autism Spectrum Advisory Board, which would create a statewide autism action plan.
This plan will be building on things that may already be existing infrastructure, existing resources, but also incorporating new information as it becomes available. Because, as we said, year after year, we're getting more and more information. We're getting more and more data, more and more statistics. So this board would be responsible for coming up with a plan, what best practices are, what's working, what's not working, what can be improved, and also collecting data.
Some parts of the package have been advocated for before, like the creation of a state-recognized autism identification card. Kate Palmer is president and CEO of the Global and Regional Asperger Syndrome Partnership, or GRASP. Palmer says she's been talking with families about the benefits of a standardized ID card for some time.
There are several organizations that provide identification cards, but I think this one is a really wonderful opportunity for New York State families because they're going to be recognizable across the board for first responders, and I think that that's a very important piece.
Santa Barbara was scheduled to join with a group of autism advocates to unveil the bill Friday afternoon at the Autism Society of the Greater Capital Region at 101 State Street in Schenectady.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. A new poll finds that voters overwhelmingly support a number of Governor Cuomo's priorities for 2016, but New Yorkers still hold mixed views about the governor himself. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Steve Greenberg, spokesman for the Siena College Research Institute, says 89% of New Yorkers view corruption at the state capitol as a serious problem. He says the issue has moved up on voters' agenda, when at this time last year it was a lower priority. That was before the headline-grabbing scandals of 2015.
In light of what happened last year, which was very dramatic, where you had two legislative leaders arrested, indicted, forced out of their leadership positions, then put on trial, convicted, and found guilty.
Voters still care more about education, job creation, and taxes than they do about fixing Albany. But there is majority support for proposals including stripping pensions from lawmakers who are convicted felons, converting to a full-time legislature and banning outside income, and closing a campaign finance loophole. It allows donors to create limited liability companies to skirt donation limits. Cuomo outlined those priorities in his recent State of the State message.
Recent acts of undermine the public's trust in government. Public trust is essential for government to function at the level we need.
The governor faces opposition, though, in the legislature. Senate Republican leader John Flanagan says he still values a part-time legislature where members work in other fields, but he says he's open to talking about improvements.
I don't believe in a ban on outside income. Those are discussions that we will have in our conference. We've already started having them. There are a lot of very important, significant details in the governor's proposal. You know, if you say you're in favor of ethics reform, I think you'd have to be a fool to suggest no. What is in there, and the devil is in the details like anything else.
Assembly Democrats have said they will make some changes in their ethical procedures, but they have not yet settled on the details. Voters also back the governor's plan to phase in a $15 minimum wage statewide, and by an even greater margin, they want paid family leave. Social justice activists gathered for a weekly Moral Monday protest outside the governor's office. Blue Carricker with Citizen Action says she's not surprised by the support in the poll.
The only surprise may come to some of the people down in the halls here who seem to think that there is a question about this. People who are living day to day know the cost of living, know the cost of providing the essentials to their families.
Senate GOP leader Flanagan says there is currently not enough support, though, among Republican senators for the $15 minimum wage proposal. He says many small businesses would suffer under the higher labor costs.
It's not just one dimension. It's not just about increasing the minimum wage. Economic development and opportunities for everybody, no matter what the sector of the state is. We're not talking enough about workforce development. We're not talking about enough about business regulations. All things that have an effect on people's ability to start, grow a business, and prosper.
Despite the popularity of his ideas, Governor Cuomo remains stuck in the polls. Since early last summer, around 50% of New Yorkers say they personally view him favorably, while his job performance rating has been around 40%. Greenberg says 58% now say that the governor is not doing a good job in office.
We have a governor in his second term. Voters have essentially made a determination. They like the guy. They don't like the guy. They think he's doing a good job. They don't think he's doing a good job.
The next gubernatorial race is not for another 2 years. But Greenberg says with a 2-to-1 Democratic enrollment and a hefty campaign war chest, the governor doesn't need to be too worried about his reelection chances. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1606 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.